The topics and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4WN Radio, its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4WN Radio.
This is Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. Do you want to live a more fulfilling life? Do you want to live your legacy and achieve your personal, professional, and financial goals? Well, coming up on Divya Parekh's Beyond Confidence, you will hear real stories of leaders, entrepreneurs, and achievers who have stepped into discomfort, shattered their status quo, and are living the life they want. You will learn how relationships are the key to achieving your aspirations and financial goals. Moving your career or business forward does not have to happen at the expense of your personal or family life, or vice versa. Learn more at www.divyaparekh.com and you can connect with Divya at contact@divyaparekh.com. This is Beyond Confidence. And now, here's your host, Divya Parekh.
Hello, listeners. This is Divya. It's Monday evening and so wonderful to be back with you. Welcome, listeners. Welcome, John.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I have to share, listeners, that, you know, today it's a special day because our guest is from Australia.
Yes, and it's actually daytime here, so I'm doing pretty good. It's only about 10 o'clock in the morning here at the time. So
it works out great. I'm really glad that it worked out that way. So I'm going to share about John. John is a 5-time number one international best-selling author. He is a versatile and experienced entrepreneur with a solid background in accounting, banking, finance, personal development, IT, marketing, and business management. John has 5 number one best-selling books about business strategy and internet marketing and his passion on squash. John currently holds a number of titles, including CEO of Evolve Systems Group, Associate Diploma in Business, and Fellow of the Institute of Public Accountants. He is very passionate to help business owners because he loves to make them more strategic and smarter about the marketing efforts. He constantly pushes the envelope of what's possible in this modern era and is widely regarded among his peers as very innovative and highly creative in his approach. John has created Evolvepreneur.club as a platform to enable him to help thousands rather than hundreds of entrepreneurs. He believes anyone can follow a system to success, but the missing keys are implementation and accountability. The new platform allows the members to immerse fully into the program, track the tasks, and be able to get feedback from peers, mastermind members, or experts. So, John, welcome again, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, and great to be on.
Yes. So, usually we start out with your passion. You know, we have already covered that your passion is to help entrepreneurs. So share with our listeners as to, did you have this passion from childhood, or did you develop the passion to help entrepreneurs or become an entrepreneur from your teenager?
It's actually quite interesting because a lot of people, I think, end up there by accident, because a lot of people I speak to don't necessarily set up to be one. But I was actually thinking the other day when I was a kid, probably around about 10 or 11 or something like that, I used to run my own little shop, pretend shop, and create my own little books, you know, like your accounting books and stuff like that. And I didn't think much of it at the time because we were just mucking around, because where I live was only a population of about 3 or 4 people, so you pretty much had to entertain yourself. And it wasn't until probably about, I think it was about 25, when I started to actually get on a sideline business that actually allowed me to start helping people. And it sort of like went on from there. So it's almost like it was a calling. It sort of drags you away, and then circumstances sort of come up to sort of put you in that situation that you sort of like have opportunities. And that's kind of how it happened. I was working at a bank for like nearly 12 years, and I really didn't have any idea of leaving. It was just the circumstances come up that I didn't like my boss, and everybody reckons they leave because of the boss or they stay because of the boss. And I left because of the boss, and because he wasn't allowing me to do what I wanted to do. And in terms of I wanted to lend money, he wanted to get it back. So I decided to sort of start my own little business, and that kind of grew from there, from the IT into book publishing, and then and also sort of wanting to try and help people in a bigger scale rather than just one-on-one.
That's a lovely story. And it just fascinates me. I can picture little John because, you know, I met you last month and it was so much fun, but I'm just imagining little John sitting there with his accounting books. So I'm assuming that you were very much interested in numbers from since you were a child.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because I'm lousy at math. So I don't know what it is because I never did very well at maths. In fact, my son, I think, inherited the non-math gene as well. So, I think it was about what numbers meant rather than what they were. So, you know, a lot of times like I ended up working in a bank, which is very number-orientated, but it's not really. Like numbers aren't really it's people and what those numbers mean to people. And I think that's really where it came from. I sort of like numbers kind of result in something. I think, you know, if you want to subscribe to the concept that numbers mean everything, you know, mathematically and in terms of, you know, sciences and stuff like that, I think it's probably where it's come from. It's like, yeah, I'm lousy at maths. Like, I need a calculator to work out a percent.
I think so, John. You know, every one of us does. Like, when I was young, I was able to recite the tables and, you know, do the math on my fingertips and in my head up to, like, 32. Like 32 times 32, and now if I have to do 5 times 5, it's like, I'm looking around, where is that darn calculator?
Well, I've got this Google Home now, so basically it can tell me the numbers as well, so I can just ask it.
Yes, and it's, oh my God, I think so. Technology has dissolved the borders, and yet at the same time, sometimes I feel like, oh my goodness, this technology has made me so stupid.
So then, yeah, it makes you lazy, I think. I think what happens is people stop thinking, because we deal with a lot, and that's what I think about with entrepreneurs. They actually stop thinking. It's almost like they get brain freezes because of something that they could have easily Googled or something nowadays. Back when I was doing started business, there was no such thing as Google. You had to figure it out yourself through books or something.
Oh, yes. I still remember the encyclopedia guy coming knocking on my door.
We couldn't afford an encyclopedia. We couldn't afford Encyclopedia Britannica. We bought Compton's Encyclopedia, which is a more cheaper version, and they accidentally shipped us two, so thought we had a bargain.
And my dad purchased that, of course, and, you know, and then he expected me to go through everything and know everything. I'm like, no, I don't want to go through all that. You know, I mean, when you're a kid, you want to play and all that. He's like, why did I buy it? I bought it for you.
Bought it because the salesman tricked you into it. That's what happened.
That's exactly what it was. So you mentioned something beautiful, John, where you said that it's what does the number mean to you? So tell us, what do numbers mean to you?
Well, I think at the end of the day, when you think about numbers, you're looking for numbers that are going to make a difference. So whether that's profit or whether that's, you know, number of followers, or I think the whole world's around, you know, based on, I guess, what we, you know, a lot of times what we're doing is building KPIs or, you know, key performance indicators, say how your business is going. And I think that's a real, like, you look in your bank account and you don't see a lot of money in your bank account, then the numbers aren't good, are they? And so, end of the day, a lot of people don't really realise that the numbers in their business can be very important. Outside what an accountant might say to you is, okay, you know, you're not making a profit or you're making too much money, paying too much tax. But really, what do the numbers inside your business really mean to you? And I think it's a great way to kind of motivate yourself too. In terms of, you know, I've got a lot of numbers that I sort of run whenever I run a business or set up a new business. I've got these numbers that I always sort of abide by and say, look, I'm, you know, my gross profit must be this, you know, these numbers must be like, look like this. And I think that's where a lot of small businesses go astray because they don't really focus on the numbers. They just look at their bank account and if it's not got any money in it, they go and get some more.
So, John, you know, when you started out as an entrepreneur, what did the numbers mean to you personally and how did you decipher what numbers were important to yourself? And then moving the question for the next step is what numbers are important to an entrepreneur?
I think when I started in business, you know, and that's probably back in the 1990s, I suppose now, I think I started like all entrepreneurs. I basically looked at the thing and said, I'm making money, so I'd spend it. And then sort of really figure out how to sort of leverage it. And then over time, you know, expenses build up. And one of the things that I noticed in business was that sooner or later your confidence can overwhelm you. So what happens is you start spending a lot of money and then suddenly something goes down and you didn't expect it. and then you're in trouble, then your expenses are higher than your income. And I've been through those sort of roller coaster rides where we've had multi-million dollar businesses, and then suddenly overnight it's dropped because of an external thing. And so I think what you've got to really be careful of is that confidence can be a killer as well in business. You've got to be really careful you don't get too confident and start spending money without realizing your foundation might not be secure. And I think that's really what's important to know is, you know, what's your recurring income? What's money going to come in without you doing anything? Have you got some reserves put away? You know, look at all those kind of things to make sure that you've got a worst case plan, or what we call like a black box, you know, having that little bit of a backup plan of the worst case scenario. And I mean, it's, you know, when airlines and stuff have, you know, major catastrophes, they have their own black box zone, which they basically have a whole thing set up ready to go because of that eventuality, which very rarely happens. But they still have it set up ready to go. And I think that's what you need to think about in business is what's your black box? Where do you want to – what would happen if the worst thing happened? And most entrepreneurs don't want to think about that. They want to think about, you know, the positive and everything, but the reality is you also want to think about the worst case scenario. And can you handle it?
And that is so true, because it's so important to think about those rainy days and have that preparation. So just simple something. I was very fortunate that I had thought about the rainy day, and then I wasn't even expecting it. And a couple of years back, I broke my right shoulder and the whole world stopped.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the scary part. I mean, like last year, I got diagnosed with bowel cancer out of the blue. And I thought to myself, well, you know, and then you got to sort of start dealing with that. And then what happened was, as a result of it, luckily I was actually caught it early, and I was actually able to have an operation, and it was all over in a week. Like, it's like people say, did you have an epiphany? No, I didn't have time, because basically I got diagnosed on Monday and I was home on Friday.
Oh, but my goodness.
The thing was then, of course, you know, my iron levels are very low, and so I was in a situation where I was actually quite, I'll say, depressed, but getting there. And so the reality was is that I probably 6 or 8 months prior to that, I hadn't been doing very well in business because I'd just been doing what I could. And then I had another 3 or 4 months of recovery time where the doctor said, look, you can't work full time. You're going to have to, you know, like a full week there, I couldn't do anything, couldn't get up or down very easily. So I had to sort of think about my business. And the nice thing about it was that my money still kept coming in. I still had recurring income. I still had systems in place of sort of people sort of doing things. And I was able to continue on trading. And virtually none of my customers knew that I was actually ill at all, like, unless I told them. So at the end of the day, we'd at least built a situation where I could actually run my business without me, or at least mobile, and keep that sort of thing in place. And now that came out of the blue. Like, I wasn't expecting that. You know, I thought, you know, you get a bit older, getting tired, you know. The reality is my iron levels are down to, like, I think 8 or something. So, you know, and that's the thing you've got to be careful of. Do you have insurance? Do you have a backup plan in the worst-case scenario in those rainy days? And I assume, you know, like, that's the dangerous part of the business, is that it can go very quickly. Your business can be gone overnight, and you've got to make sure that you've got that plan just in case.
Oh, absolutely. So let's say if we have entrepreneurs in our listeners, you know, they're thinking about becoming entrepreneurs. So what would your advice be that, you know, starting out entrepreneurs, what would they go about as far as the numbers are concerned? Like, you know, yes, you know, we have talked about KPIs, we have talked about having the rainy day accounts. And of course, you know, it's also, you have to see, like, you know, what's your return on investment going to be, what investments you're going to put. But if somebody were to sit down and think, so what different numbers would you recommend for them?
Well, I think what you think about is, and not just about the numbers, but again, what the numbers mean. So for example, I think the biggest mistake most small businesses think is that, or entrepreneurs think, that they can actually be everything to everyone. So they can just sell it to anyone. And, you know, like, I've got, there's, you know, like, Facebook might say, look, there's a 7 billion people on the planet, you know, we'll get 2 billion or whatever users or whatever. And the reality is that's a very, very generic product. Nobody uses, has got that luxury to be able to be that generic. So you've got to be very clear about, number one, who is your target market? And also, is it big enough? Is the numbers going to rank up? So if you've picked a really obscure, say, an illness or something that you're going to focus on, and only 200 people in the world have it, then maybe it's going to be tough to kind of make that a business. You know, so you've got to make sure the numbers rank up. And they always say that, like in Facebook, if you go and run ads, if you can't come up with 1 million people in an audience, chances are that's never going to sell well. So you know, reality is you've got to look at that and say, okay, my niche market is this. And understand, you know, understand your customer very well and who's going to be your customer, because that's a lot of times they don't spend time on that. And then you just take on anybody who's got a pulse, which I used to do. And some have got to wonder whether they actually did have a pulse. But the thing was that, you know, you got to be careful that you've got that, it's going to rank up. Then if, let's say you've got a nice big market, what will they pay? How much money will you get from them? And what's the most amount you can charge? And sometimes, like in my experience, when I started my marketing business, I was charging $500 a month. And within 3 months, I was charging $10,000 a month. And so, but the same work. And what reality is people will pay more if you can deliver more value. So what can you do there as well? What value can you deliver that push your price up? Don't become the cheapest shop on the street, because that's not a good plan, not unless you've got a price advantage, which most people in small business don't.
And you're absolutely right on the mark, John, that it's so important to have the right target market. And it's, again, differentiating between who's your target market. Target market is, it can be very broad, because these are the people that you're addressing, these are your prospects. But then from the prospects, you need to set up systems where you're filtering out people that you don't want, and where you boil down to the ideal clients. It's very, very important to do that, because if you're working with people that's going to drain your energy, you will find that you'll not be able to deliver value to them.
Yeah, they'll weigh you down.
So it's not only about having the right target market, but even before having the right target market, as you mentioned, it's about having that mindset, creating the money mindset. And John, can you share your story when you started out? What kind of money mindset did you have?
Well, the thing was that when I started off, I was working in the bank. So obviously you think that if you're working in a bank, you know all about money, don't you? Well, the reality is that they kind of protect you in the bank. They won't even let you borrow a lot of money if you work in the bank. You have to borrow money from another bank. That's what we had to do. And so the reality is, it's because like you're a financial, I see these financial advisors, just because you're a financial advisor doesn't mean you're good with money. It just means you're good at telling other people about money. So I think part of the problem was with me is that I didn't understand a lot about the costs and stuff of overheads of business. And I think that's what got me in the end in the early days, was that I kept on spending money without realizing, you know, what it meant on the bottom line. So making sure you make sure you get that right. But, you know, even with target market is, you know, I can just sort of address that thing a little bit. With Facebook now, for ads, for example, you can target what they think and what they like. Years ago, you could only target a market by, say, they were age between this and this, they're male or female, that sort of stuff. But in terms of what they like and what they want, is something that you can actually target now. And so thinking about how you get that right in terms of looking for the right sort of people you want to deal with. And it kind of depends on the business size. If it's one-on-one, you know, like in a scenario where you're coaching and stuff, you've got to be really clear about who you want and who you don't want. And I think, you know, learning to say no is a big one. Like I was reading, so I was actually in the process of writing my book, and one of the things that came out was, as you get more and more successful, you say no more, not yet, not yes more. And so you really realize that the opportunities that you took on early on that sounded like an opportunity, were they a great opportunity? Were they just a good one? And then choose the great ones, not the good ones, because you're going to spend the time, most of spend the time on a great opportunity, not a good one.
That's something that's so important, because so many times what happens is that as an entrepreneur, you end up going after every single shiny new toy that comes your way, because sometimes, especially, you know, if you're walking out of the corporate world or if you are just starting out, you're on an entrepreneur high, as I call it. And yep. And you're like, okay, especially because, you know, when you're going to networking meetings and you're looking at the definition of being an entrepreneur, and they say, oh yeah, entrepreneurs can take risks, and you think you have thought it through, but then it again goes back to the number that, okay, I want to go for the new shiny toy. Does my budget allow for that? And what are my operating costs? What are my profits? Am I able to pay myself? Because you may have money in the bank and you may think that, you know, you're having profits, but the key is to know that, are you able to pay yourself? And are you able to invest back into the money? Because if you're not able to do that, then you cannot grow a business. And did you have any experiences where, as you were growing your business, that you had difficulties?
Oh, for sure. I mean, and also, actually, I saw a presentation by a fairly famous marketer, and he said something about, it was quite funny, and the woman he was interviewing sort of looked at him as if he had two heads. But he said that basically, you know, every so often you should bring your business to the brink of disaster, right? And it's like, well, I reckon I've done that plenty of times, because the thing is that a really, you know, an entrepreneur that's really willing to push the edges are going to come to that edge where basically you can fall over it. And so a couple of times in my business career where I've done really well, then suddenly something out of the blue hit me. Like in Australia, we had a thing called goods and services tax came in back in year 2000. And what we didn't realise was that whilst it created a heap of opportunities and generated, you know, probably better income than ever. And so basically it was great. But the thing is, as soon as that period was over, people stopped spending because they got scared because of this tax they had to pay. So basically they had to pay 10% of everything they billed out. They had to collect it for the government and send it to the government, so they'd become an unpaid tax collector. And so what happens, everybody got panicky, and my business dropped overnight by 80%. And what I'd done is I'd made the mistake of leveraging my business too much. So I had staff, we had overheads, we'd built new premises, we'd done all these things ready for this so-called boom that was coming. And I wasn't the only one of that one. And in fact, when I look back, there was an era where a lot of people around my age, you know, went under because of the fact that they didn't expect it to go that bad either. And so it just caused this huge slump which came out of the blue. And I learned so much about how to survive in business at the worst times of the business as opposed to the best times. And I think it's the same thing. You learn more from failure than success. And so I learned a lot about how to deal with contract, you know, people that are, you owe money to, how to concentrate on survival, how to get through that process where most people would have given up. And I think that's really where the difference between a real entrepreneur is that no matter what happens, he doesn't give up. No matter what happens to him or what people do to him, he still doesn't give up. He still comes up the next day and starts again. And I think that's the ultimate test for an entrepreneur. Do you go get a job if it's not working out, or do you push through and stay with what you believe in?
That's a great point. That is the litmus test, that when the rubber meets the road, are you going to be right there and stay with it? Because ultimately, regardless whether you're going in a job or whether you're going to be an entrepreneur, there's always risk associated. Yes, with paychecks, as far as when you're in corporate, there's guaranteed paycheck coming month after month, but there is no guarantee that you'll not get laid off at exactly a moment's notice. Mm. So when entrepreneurs are thinking about taking bigger risks, what advice would you give them?
Oh, I think it comes down to gut feeling. I think, you know, a lot of times most people ignore their gut feeling. So they'll think to themselves, and I mean, there's plenty of times where I've started a project, got all excited about it, and maybe I'm dealing with someone else with it, but deep down I felt there's something not right. And so I wasn't doing things that I was supposed to do for that project. I was putting things off, right? And I think, and then a week later or whatever, the whole thing wouldn't work out or something would go wrong in terms of that. And I kind of knew that I should have followed my gut then, because my gut feeling was don't waste any time on it, right? And so a lot of times it's not following your gut as where it gets into trouble. So it all in the face value, you know, mathematically, logically, it all makes sense, but your gut tells you there's something not right there, or your gut tells you that you've got something, all right, and that you need to, you don't know why, but you just really feel like it's got something there. And I think that's the trick, is to figure out what your gut's telling you, because it's very intelligent in terms of that, because it's connected to your brain and it's telling you stuff that your brain's not realizing. And so I think number one is make sure that if you're really passionate about it and you can, and it's not something you're going to get sick of in a week's time, then it's worth pursuing. And if it's really worth pursuing, like I had a scenario where I call it the 7-year war, where we were at war with our supplier for 7 years. When I look back at it, I think, was I crazy or what? Because I could have just shut that business down and walked away and, you know, gone bankrupt or whatever. And a lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people would have lost their services and all that sort of stuff, but I decided not to do that, and I hung in there and basically we battled through, and in the end it worked out all right. Not as great, but it worked out all right, because I didn't want to leave those people in the lurch. And so I think that's the thing, is if your gut tells you to do something, and sometimes later on you think that that was a great idea at the time, but in retrospect, maybe it wasn't. But the reality is you've got to make your decisions and then stick by them. And I think that's, I think the gut feeling is the biggest one, is if you feel deep down that it's right, then you've got to keep going.
That is so true. It's about that gut feeling. And then, you know, when we talk about the gut feeling, it's also important to have the mindset, because sometimes you can get caught in the fear, and sometimes fear can hold you back. So it's very important to take that gut feeling and also analyze it with a rational mind, because that's what will help you differentiate between a fear and a true instinctual guidance that you're getting from within.
Because your body, either, you know, most people either, you know, fight or flee, basically, in a scenario where you're in a situation where you're going to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't, it maybe it's a little decision or a really big decision, like a big guy's coming to bed, it hits you. The reality is that you've got to make that decision, and a lot of people will make it under fear. It was actually one of our most popular podcasts on our Evolvepreneur channel is Ending Fear Itself or something. It's probably the most downloaded podcast. It was interesting. And so people are very interested in fear. And I think a lot of people make decisions out of fear. Oh, I can't leave my job because no one would want my skills. Or I can't leave my job because I'll have too many financial commitments, or I don't understand how to do this. It's all fear-based. And you can't run your life on fear, because you're running out of energy running your life on fear. So you've really got to listen to the gut and connect it to your mind and make sure that those two are, you know, make sense. And I think that the reality is, if you can explain to someone in 30 seconds or to a minute what you're about and they get it, then you're on the right track. But a lot of times I talk to small business people and say, what do you do? And 20 minutes later, I still don't know. They're still trying to explain it to me. They're still trying to explain to me what the hell they do. And I'm going, I don't get it. What do you do? Because they can't succinctly get it right in their own mind. How can you ever explain it to someone else? And that's one big thing with marketing, is that you've got to be really clear to the outside world what you are and what you're about. And if you're not, well, then obviously they'll just make it up, and then it could be the wrong thing. So you've got to be really clear and succinct about what you're about. Otherwise, you will, you know, you'll lose people. They won't get a clue what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Great point. So, John, if you were to give advice to your older self, what advice would you give to John, younger John?
Keep more of the money. Because I think about all the money that slipped through my hands over the last, and I'm thinking like, I don't really want to add it up too much, but I think it's like $50 million. I really think that I've probably, you know, through my hands has been $50 million over the last probably 20 years. And I made it and I spent it, but I didn't keep it. And I think one of the biggest things in business that I sort of figured out was that when you're in business, and once you get to a point where you've got some positive cash flow, start investing in something else. Invest in shares, invest in other areas that aren't necessarily attached to you at all as a safety blanket. So that black box kind of scenario can easily be solved by investing in, say, shares or managed trusts or something else that isn't connected to you. And that's really my advice, was to hang on to that money more, because when I look back and look at the money that's gone and think, oh, that seemed like a good idea to spend the money on that at the time, but really if I'd have thought about it, I probably wouldn't have. And that's basically what I reckon. I should have hung on to more of the money. And there's a guy that I did business with that I merged with at one point as a partner. What a disaster that was. I don't do well with partnerships. But anyway, as I found out about the third or fourth time I tried. But the reality was that he had this idea that he was only going to work to 9 to 5. So because he went to his other business partner's hospital bed, and he was basically back in the days of fax machines, and he was basically had a heart attack. He was in hospital, not looking good, and he was still working. He was still answering faxes and stuff. And this guy's got to freak him out and said, there's no way that I want to be like that. I'm not going to be on my deathbed worrying about, you know, what customers want or stuff like that. And so he decided the opposite. He'd only work 9 to 5. And after that, he'd switch off and go home. That would be it. Well, to me, that was a job, right?
Right.
Right. So what he didn't anticipate was that maybe that guy was so passionate about business that he wanted to look after people, and maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing to be working on your deathbed. I don't know. But the reality is most people don't wish they could spend more time at work if they were on their deathbed. They felt that they had experiences, and I think that's about what entrepreneurs can do. They can have experiences, So don't just focus on money necessarily, but what money will get you. And generally speaking, that's an experience. You know, it's a holiday. Maybe that's a car that you want to have or whatever, a house you want to have. But at the end of the day, it's just an experience that you want. People buy experiences after they've paid for something that's, you know, static. So I think that's the trick to it, is that leverage it to have your experiences and spend a lot of time and money on experiences rather than necessarily having lots of things that don't really – aren't really assets, you know. That very expensive car isn't an asset.
It is. I mean, because you know, once you drive off a new car, it immediately loses its value.
So you just bought a very expensive experience that was short-term, that didn't really result in anything more than, oh, okay, I bought this brand-new car and it's really nice, but the reality is I'm going to be paying a fortune for it. And actually quite interesting, one of my mates in Hollywood, he, when he was an investment banker, he decided that he needed to generate, you know, like get in contact with these higher-end individuals. And because they were just, you know, not very well known, they had no way of sort of getting in front of them. So what they went and leased this $10,000 a month car. I forget what it was, but it was a really fancy car, right? They're very hard to get hold of. And what he'd do is he'd take the car to all these events and let the rich people drive it because they wanted the experience, right?
Mm.
And suddenly they were making – he said that car made us absolute fortune, right? Because what was happening was people coming to him, saying, can we drive this car? You know, I've heard about this car. Geez, you're great guys for letting us lend it for us the weekend. You know, they'd be sweating bricks because, you know, if they prang it's going to cost too much money, but they let the, you know, the millionaire and multimillionaire go and lend it for the weekend because of the experience they were giving them. And so it was quite interesting how they kind of did. He said, but it was big, you know, they were really scared when they rented this, released this thing, because it was $10,000 a month they had to come up with to pay for it. But they made millions out of it. So, yeah, experiences is key to it, I think. And also it comes down to the customer's experience with you. If they have a good experience, they'll come back. If they have a bad experience, they'll tell everybody and never come back.
Oh, absolutely. That is one of – you hit something really good over there, John, is about the experience. And that's so important that, you know, nowadays, especially with social media and so much abundance and prevalence everywhere, it's about the experience that people go after. And when we talk about experience and talking about the leads – what's the fastest way to generate leads on the internet?
And that's something I get a lot. And it's interesting, it's sort of like this double-edged sword to that question, because what happens is when I talk to customers about building their brands and building their database and all this stuff, all I hear is blah, 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 leads, blah, 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 leads. They never hear the words in between, right? Because all they think is lead generation. If I get lots and lots of leads, I'll be right, you know, I'll convert them. And it all comes back to numbers sometimes. So it's the conversion rate of those leads. So when I was selling accounting software, I tracked my conversion rate and it was around 80%. So 80% of the people I got in front of as a qualified lead, I could convert them into a sale. So the question is with lead generation is not necessarily quantity, but quality. And so a few years ago, about 18 months ago, we actually did an experiment on LinkedIn and started to use LinkedIn as much as possible. And now we've got software that does it automatically as well. But the reality was, that was the quickest way that I could find business. So if you're in a business where you can find your customer, and if you can't identify your customer, can't find them, well, you're doomed anyway, right? But if you can identify your customers and start conversations with them, so this is all about conversations will lead to leads. So if you can have a conversation with a lot of people, the more conversations you have, the more chance you're going to get sales out of it. Interesting enough, Microsoft calls their Outlook program in there. They don't call them emails. They call them conversations. So it was interesting. So the reality is you have lots and lots of conversations with people. So go onto LinkedIn, for example, start conversations, connect to people on Facebook, start conversations. Don't try and sell them something, but just start a sort of interaction. People will come to you and go, what can you do there? But then make sure that your branding and what you do is very clear so they don't get confused. So they don't end up going, oh, okay, I don't think you do can help me. Well, how do you get that? How do you figure that, right? And that's really the trick. And that costs you nothing to do. It takes you time, right? And eventually you could probably get a VA to help you or something like that. But the reality is that start conversations with people. That's the quickest way for lead generation. And on the internet, probably LinkedIn, to a degree Twitter and Facebook, because it's harder to talk to people because they tend to think you're kind of spamming them or scamming them, one of the two. But in LinkedIn, they will respond to you if they're good quality people. And I think we got more business out, millions, probably over $1 million out of LinkedIn in the last 18 months just by starting conversations.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely a great point that you mentioned, that, you know, it's about filtering out the people that you don't want and having connecting with the right customers. So I know you have a great membership site, Evolvepreneur Club. Can you share something about that?
Okay, that was one of my little experiments. So one of the things that was sort of bugging me was that when we're dealing with people, and I'd sort of deal with you know, customer on one-on-one basis and help them with their marketing and get some results for them. The reality was that it was very hard to be able to service lots of people. And part of the problem was also they couldn't necessarily afford you anyway, but they were keen to do it. And so one of the biggest issues then I found was that, and everybody does this, you go buy a course on the subject or you go do something and you don't do anything, right? You don't finish the course. You don't finish reading that book. You don't finish anything because you're not accountable to anybody. And there's no implementation in the first place. And so one of the things that we sort of started to focus on was, okay, give them courses and give them information. And the reality is that didn't work that well when we first tested it. So I wanted a bit of a test run to see what would happen. So we give people courses to do stuff and people just don't buy them, right? But what we, after a lot of research and a lot of talking to people, is a good place to start. What I realized was that having a platform to implement and also be accountable or have people ask questions and like a mastermind is really the secret between the successful people and unsuccessful people, right? Successful people always talk about having mastermind groups and mentors and people like that. Unsuccessful people talk about how they can't afford them, right? And so what we're building at the moment, so our initial platform is basically really designed around courses, but we're building something for next year where we'll be able to have a scenario where people will be able to track their success through the process. Like, you know, this is your success path. This is what you'll do. This is what you need to do. This is the sort of people you need help from. And give them more supportive role, but then be able to do that in a volume-based scenario, not just a couple of hundred people, but thousands. And that's kind of always been my kind of strategy or dream, is to be able to leverage what we do somehow, mm-hmm. be able to give lots of people the ability to opt into it. And I think that's the secret, because I think having a to-do list and being motivated to finish that list and do those things. Like, for example, most people will say to me, you know, what's your elevator pitch or what's your USP? And they'll go, yeah, we'll talk about that later, all right? And when I was ever doing the marketing, we'd always have that scenario where to this day there's several customers that still won't do it, right? Yet they're not doing well because they never clearly defined who they are and what they do and what customer suits them. They won't do it. Why? Why? I don't know why they don't do it. Maybe it's lazy. Maybe it's they're scared to do it. Who knows? But they won't do it. Well, they have to do it. Like, it's a rule to me. If you don't understand who your customers are and what you do for them, then I don't know what the hell you're doing, really. And that was really what we wanted to do. So that's why we're kind of building that platform and building that kind of thing, because I don't see it anywhere else. You do a course, there's no – typically you don't even know you've done the module, right? There's no way to tick off that you've even done it. And then you go back and listen to something later and go, I've listened to that before, I think, you know, and you're confused. And so to me, that kind of process, almost like school, when, you know, I don't necessarily believe that schools are the best scenarios, but the reality is they have got one secret. You start on semester one, day one, and the end of that semester you've achieved certain things and you've had to do certain things. Otherwise you don't pass. And I think that's the secret to it. That's the thing that school probably teaches people to do, and they stop straight away as soon as they leave. They don't hold themselves to that schedule, that 90-day schedule. You know, most semesters run in Australia, they run about 90 days. It's interesting. And so, absolutely. And 90 days to success to me is anything you can do in 90 days, right? And in this day right. and age, you know, reality is you could plan your business out 5-10 years in advance now. You'd be lucky to plan it out for 3 months now because things change so fast. So have that 90-day rollover process where every 90 days you're focusing on what's important in the business and getting to the next level and implementing and being accountable for it. And that's kind of what I came up with, you know. It's the missing piece of the puzzle, I thought, and that's software. Now, if you can deliver that missing piece of the software in a scenario in a software environment where someone can just tick boxes and do stuff, then you've got a half a chance that they might do it.
Oh, and that's very profound and powerful. And I know, John, you are also writing your next book, so can you share with us?
Yeah, and that's the book I've written twice now. I had this idea in my head and I wrote it one way and then I decided I didn't like it and then I wrote it another way. And then we started on the concept of figuring out what the five stages of success was, and that's what the name of the book was in the first place. And then so we came up with the concept of this five essential stages to what I term entrepreneurial success, and that is, and that doesn't really mean any difference between someone offline or online really, but it probably more so towards online kind of business, which pretty much everybody is now. And then you kind of start at founder stage, and we built some actual cartoon graphics on this sort of thing to give people an idea. But you start at founder stage where you're thinking about the idea. You move into explorer stage where you start finding out what's viable, start signing up for stuff, start marketing, start playing around. And then you move on to organizer stage where you get your business in control and start to have your KPIs and that kind of stuff. And then once you burst from organizer, you move into investor, which essentially means you're investing back in your business or you're finding people to invest in your business, whatever. And the last step we call time master, which is a person that's actually got a point where business probably runs itself or can run itself or is automated in a way that you don't have to do a lot of the things that you don't want to do or you've got staff in place. And so to move from that founder to the time master stage is kind of what we want to look at. And so writing around those five stages is fun. But hard, because it's almost like, okay, would you do that at that stage? No, probably not, but you should do that at that stage, right? So this internal argument I've got going on about which should go where. That's why I've had to write the thing like twice now, because I still think, oh, no, that's not right. They can't be there. It's too early. So that's basically what the book's about. And so to give you that framework and then obviously lead in, if they want more help, then lead into the software solution for Volpreneur Club once we've got that done. So that's mm-hmm. kind of my but I gave myself 90 days, you see, because we put the book up on pre-order when I was at an event last – I think we met it last June, in June, where I put the book up on pre-order for 90 days to force myself into the concept of having to do this in 90 days.
Oh, that's and lovely. Still,
and I've got 20,000 words done, and I've got to write another 10 or 15,000 words in the next week. Otherwise, I'm going to be behind scale.
I know. If anybody can do it, John, you can do it. So we are reaching to the close of the show. So if you can share with our listeners where they can reach you, and if you have a free gift to share with them, please go ahead and do it.
Okay, great. So if they go to evolvepreneur.club at the moment, there's one there called Free Resources. There's a course you can sign up for. So basically you can sign up for the membership for free and you can get the course for free. And inside that course is everything that I use, software orientated or whatever, for my business. So all the things that I've searched through and found that work or don't, and pretty much we only recommend stuff we use, so we only eat our own dog food essentially. And so that's probably something the listeners would find very valuable, because what it means is they can find some software tools to improve their businesses rather than doing things manually, which I hate. I think you can automate almost anything, so focusing on that automation process as well. If they want to go to johnnorth.com.au, that's all about my books and stuff like that, if they want to have a look at that. But if they go to evolvepreneur.club, they'll be able to basically get access to that free resources course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. And how can they get in touch with you?
Basically, you can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook if you do a search. But if you just go to johnnorth.com.au, I've got the ability, if you want to book an appointment with me, or wish we got an online calendar for which is totally automated. Funny about that. And so basically the idea is that, you know, you go there, you can pretty much branch off to anything else you want to see. And it's got access to my books as well. So if you go on a Kindle, you know, you can look up a book called Everything You Know About Marketing Is Wrong, which is pretty good, I thought. And the five stages of the entrepreneurial success, which is on pre-order at the moment and will be out in about a week's time. So that's probably the best place to start.
Oh, yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to all of this. And listeners, I've tried Evolvepreneur, and it's really definitely a great place to be. And I'm looking forward to your book, John.
Thanks. Thanks, me too. I'll get back to my life a little bit after I finish this book.
Absolutely.
It's hard work writing a book when you don't do it every day, right?
Oh, writing a book is always hard. You know, I'm on my 11th book, and every time I write up the book, it's almost like as if I'm just that newbie and kind of getting into the book writing mode. And once you get into the flow, then words start coming. But thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, John. This was a wonderful time. got to learn a lot, and I'm sure our listeners learned a lot too. And listeners, again, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm happy to help you out, and I hope to give some advice to your listeners to improve their entrepreneurial journey.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be able to take several of the nuggets that you have shared today and go and implement in their entrepreneurial life. Listeners, thank you again for joining us. And if I can support you in any way or form, please reach out to me at contact@diviaparekh.com. And until next Monday, be brilliant and shine your light. Take care and bye for now.
Thank you for being part of Beyond Confidence with your host, Divya Parekh. We hope you have learned more about how to start living the life you want. Each week on Beyond Confidence, you hear stories of real people who have experienced growth by overcoming their fears and building meaningful relationships. During Beyond Confidence, Divya Parekh shares what happened to her when she stepped out of her comfort zone to work directly with people across the globe. She not only coaches people how to form heart connections, but also transform relationships to mutually beneficial partnerships as they strive to live the life they want. If you are ready to live the life you want and leverage your strengths, learn more at www.diviaparekh.com. And you can connect with Divya at contact@diviaparekh.com. We look forward to you joining us next week, Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.